Trump's Freedom Fuel initiative is interesting as both a policy and a political communication story. 25 Philadelphia-area gas stations are cutting prices today as the president publicly pressures retailers to pass along falling oil costs. Amazon Prime is simultaneously running a 50-cent per gallon discount at over 7,500 BP and Amoco stations for the July 4th weekend. These are very different mechanisms. One is presidential jawboning of the retail energy sector. The other is a private loyalty program subsidy, but they're both landing in the same political space heading into the holiday.
The oil market backdrop is relevant here. Crude has dropped to four-month lows as Hormuz flows recover from the disruption caused by the Iran conflict earlier this spring. That means the underlying commodity price is actually moving in a direction that supports lower pump prices, regardless of presidential pressure. Trump is essentially taking credit for a market dynamic that is partially attributable to geopolitical developments, the de-escalation in the Strait of Hormuz, that are themselves only partially within his control.
The grab-a-gun story has genuine governance implications. The ATF is proposing to allow home delivery of firearms, and Donald Trump Jr. holds a stake in grab-a-gun, a major online gun retailer that would directly benefit from a rule change that makes home delivery of firearms easier. The overlap between regulatory proposals and the financial interests of the first family is the kind of conflict of interest issue that gets significant attention regardless of the underlying policy merits.
The underlying policy question, whether licensed dealers should be able to deliver firearms directly to customers' homes, is substantive. Currently, federal law requires gun transfers to go through a licensed dealer in the buyer's state, creating what's called the FFL transfer process. Allowing home delivery would require either expanding which parties can conduct the background check or changing the background check requirements themselves. The conflict of interest optics make it very difficult to evaluate the policy on its merits.
Trump's Bitcoin capital gains tax comments from the CNBC interview are generating attention in the crypto community. He questioned whether capital gains taxes should apply to Bitcoin transactions, which would be a major policy shift. Currently, the IRS treats cryptocurrency as property, meaning every transaction is a taxable event. Eliminating capital gains treatment for Bitcoin would remove one of the primary friction points in everyday Bitcoin adoption. Whether this is a genuine policy signal or interview improvisation is unclear.
The Ninth Circuit, upholding the LA area gas appliance ban in a 2-to-1 ruling, is worth contextualizing. This ruling involves local regulations prohibiting natural gas appliances in new construction in parts of Southern California. It's part of a broader regulatory push toward building electrification that's been playing out in California municipalities for several years. The Ninth Circuit's 2-to-1 split suggests this is legally contested, and the dissent presumably argues the local regulations are preempted by federal natural gas law, a case the Supreme Court may eventually weigh in on.
Trump's Georges Bank scallop fishing announcement is one of those policy stories that looks like a quirky holiday week news release, but actually has ecological and economic stakes. Georges Bank, off the coast of New England, is one of the world's most productive fishing grounds. The protected areas that Obama and Biden created were based on stock assessments showing certain zones needed recovery periods. Opening 171 square miles of those protected areas satisfies commercial fishing interests, but the stock data that justified the closures doesn't expire based on who is president.
And then there's the Honda CR-V, overtaking the Ford F-150 as America's top-selling vehicle in the first half of 2026. The F-150 has held that title for over 40 consecutive years. This is a genuine behavioral shift in the American auto market. Gas prices, the age demographics of new car buyers, the urban-suburban balance, and the reliability records of the two vehicles all factor in. It's also a story about the erosion of domestic auto manufacturing identity, given that the CR-V is produced by a Japanese company, though significant CR-V production happens in U.S. plants.